Good morning, everyone. Thanks to the organizers for inviting me to discuss this paper. I enjoyed the presentation, Tom, of your paper and reading your paper. I have 10 minutes, 10 slides, okay? That I already had the first slide. That's the second one. I don't want to repeat the whole paper, but the essence, the claim in the paper, and that was nicely formulated actually also at the end, is that the paper is about closing the gap. Yeah? On the balance sheet, there is a missing asset, and at least you find an asset that you can capitalize, so the gap is getting a little bit smaller. So the ratios change. It improves the usefulness of financial information. It benefits the valuation of a company, and in particular, these high intangible type of companies and these different industries that you mentioned at the end. But you cautioned, and this is quite nice, and the reviewer apparently also made an issue about this. It's an additional cost, okay? Compliance costs, audit costs, legal uncertainties, and especially the last one, that's managerial discretion. Yeah. And then the claim, the main claim is it's good for everyone. It's good for the standard setters in the room. It's good for the investors. It's good for management because you know what you measure, you manage. So then I could stop here. No, it's great. But I have three discussion points about the conceptual model, recognition versus disclosure, and the empirical analysis. So the first one, the conceptual model, a few things here. I'm not finding, although you showed some journal entries and so on, but and you mentioned it briefly, IFRS 3 and so on, you mentioned, but what's the relation between the human capital that you now put on the balance sheet and some other elements, actually, that companies might put on the balance sheet? For example, the internally generated R&D, that you can capitalize once you actually get into the development stage, and there is a very significant component of employee-related expenses that you do, so salaries, employee benefits, stock-based compensation for this R&D staff. Yeah? And that seems to be in line actually with the type of expenses that you want to capitalize also among these non-compete clauses. The other one, and that's what you mentioned in particular also, when you have an acquisition going on, you acquire, you put some of the employee expenses of the acquired company on your balance sheets. For example, if you can see that some of these expenses relate to specific R&D projects, and then you have in-process R&D, or yeah, some other parts are basically put into goodwill, okay, if you cannot do the first one. So, and I wonder, like, do you have some double counting going on now if you would also put these things actually on your balance sheet? So, now the second part, recognition versus disclosure. The question is, of course, are capital markets participants smart enough to figure out what the value is of these people that you have in your company, yeah? These unrecognized intangible assets as they are now. And there is this recent paper by Mark, I don't know, Mark, where okay, Mark, I won't ask you to actually summarize your paper here, but it's a very interesting recent paper, Mark and co-authors, where they show actually that closing the gap is a misperception. If you look at the sample period 1985 to 2020, and you use a very simple residual income valuation model, and you use analyst earnings forecasts as inputs for 5 years and then the terminal value, that actually the gap is not so much a gap anymore. So what's the problem? Yeah. And I definitely urge you to look at this paper and kind of consider these findings, because this is taking away a little bit the missing gap argument. Yeah. The other one is human capital disclosures. verifiability is an issue, and so that relates back to what I already indicated. And what you actually see that is happening now is that the standard setters are going a little bit in the direction, but not only a little bit, but in the direction of disclosure. Yeah, so the SEC has this human capital disclosure rules, and, where you give more details actually on the workforce, and then the CSRD, that's the European one, it's now being revised, but still you get a lot of details actually on specific elements that matter in terms of assessing the quality of the human capital, yeah, through disclosures, and lots of disclosures. I'll give you just as a very quick picture of Microsoft. So that's the most recent 10K report. Their fiscal year end is at the end of June. And what you actually see there is that they break down, in the first paragraph, they break down the total number of employees and the different type of functions they have, also international, national. And then in the second paragraph, they talk about all kinds of policies where they kind of treat their employees well, and I mean, they continuous learning is important, they have a good culture, they monitor all kinds of dimensions, equal pay and these types of things, so they really take good care of their employees, whether it's true or not, okay, but that's a policy. So you get lots of details, and if I would summarize it, so according to these new SEC rules, you have more quantitative data and you have qualitative aspects about all kinds of issues like compensation, inclusion, and well-being. And they link it to their business strategy because they are very explicit about this. So you get much more than what it used to be, only a number of employees and then especially executive compensation that was disclosed under the US rules. Now, if you go one step further, because the claim, remember, the claim is not only for the standard setters, but actually our investors actually getting better from this capitalization. There is this stream of literature that uses Glassdoor as a database, which is a rating based on what employees themselves tell you about their feelings and perceptions about the company. And this JFE paper, quite an influential JFE paper, shows actually that these ratings are kind of quite strongly linked to future earnings surprises and stock returns. Yeah? So having this external information that is available seems to be quite helpful actually to investors. Now, going back to the football players, and by coincidence, this is the annual exercise I give to my executive students. So they have to talk, and especially the male people. I mean, it's a very typical, traditional thing that the male students like to do all these analyses of these football teams in Europe and so on. So, and I mean, their conclusion is always the same. I mean, this is really confusing, okay? This is non-comparable, and the reason is actually, and you mentioned it, Tom, so I mean, you're very transparent about this. The reason is actually that you have a mix of football players, and especially in the Netherlands, so I work in Tilburg, the Netherlands, Ajax, one of the dream teams of the Netherlands, has a lot of own developed players that you don't put actually on the balance sheet. So if you compare Ajax, which has a very low fair value, to some of these English teams, where they always kind of buy these people in the transfer market, it's a very, very different kind of balance sheet that you see, and it's all very confusing. And if you look at the results of these, the actual results, how they play actually, it's very difficult to compare. And so that's, and you have lots of football analytics where you have very close and accurate information actually on the value of these players. Last, the empirical analysis. I'm almost there. The empirical analysis, you showed the ratios are changing when you capitalize. Well, it would be nice actually to consider, because you always take the same capitalization method for all the companies, but we know you have good and bad companies. You have companies that grow fast, you have companies that do not grow fast. And if you actually start including this, then of course your capitalization and amortization factors will change. So how does it affect your system? And that's exactly what the auditors will struggle with, I guess. Predicting future sales, because it's a non-compete clause, it would be almost a natural thing to test future sales, yeah? Because if this is such a great number and useful number, and it's non-compete, so that would be. And the value relevance study, you mentioned the Olsen model. This was my thesis many, many years ago. There is a little bit of misspecification actually in the model, okay? So this loss dummy is fine, but you also need to have a loss term for net income, positive and negative. But also Olsen model is especially what's the other information. And the other information is exactly, so I would like you to put the component itself as a separate component in your regression model and not kind of do the capitalized factors or what you did. So all in all, and I can tell you much more about this, Tom, later on, but all in all, the conclusion is it's a very interesting paper for the debate, the current debate, and it's a long-standing debate. It's a nice setting, okay, because you showed the table. New Zealand actually has all this information, and I know you are using a proxy, but it's all kind of quite nicely thought through. But there are some improvement that I suggest in terms of conceptual model, a little bit more, more rigorous empirical analysis, and especially, and apparently the reviewer actually said this too, especially looking at the practical implementation issues, because this is where the standard setters may say, look, we are not going to do this. I mean, the monster is actually not so nice as you showed actually on your slides. Okay. Thank you very much.